Okay, I'm back with you, so I'm assuming everybody can hear me now, and we're going to start recording. This is the fourth in our call series, and this is part of the fundraising call series for Global Village, and it's the focus of this call series is planning great fundraising events. And my name is Rose Morgan, and I work with the Global Village and Thrive and Build Worldwide program. And I'm really happy to have you all join us this evening for the call. As I said, we'll probably have some folks buzzing in throughout the course of the call, and we may or may not stop to have them introduce. The focus of these calls are also to have you all engaged in the discussion. One thing that I will ask you is you can use *6 is a way for you to mute your line. So I am actually getting a little bit of feedback right now. So *6 is a way to mute your line so you can just listen. And then when you're ready to kind of say something or share with the group, you can hit *6 again. And then we'll be able to hear you speaking. So I just wanted to kind of give you a little bit of the context of the fundraising calls and what we've done so far. We have one more call in our call series that will be next Thursday evening. And next Thursday evening's call series will be about how we thank and keep our donors engaged. And we have a guest speaker named Larry Galante, who just got back from India, who had a very successful fundraising campaign and is going to join us to share his experience. We started our call series a few weeks ago with this idea of how to create a plan and be able to kind of design a plan for yourself and looking at the different ways you want to approach fundraising. And we also invited a guest speaker named Sandra Powell to share a little bit about the Share.Habitat online fundraising tool. And then our second call was devoted to kind of assessing your network and determining who you should be asking and also how you're going to go about asking them, whether that's, you know, via email and connecting them to your fundraising page or personal phone calls, letters, or even this idea of creating some events. So that was the second call. And then last week's call focused on creating a good appeal letter. And we had a colleague of ours that had a successful fundraising experience in raising funds for her Nepal trip share some of the creative ways that she reached out to her donors and also did some follow-up from the trip in writing an article as well. So we are, we have recorded the calls. We're working with some folks to edit the calls and get them posted as a resource for both leaders and volunteers to access. And we'll very likely also begin another call series in about a month, kind of following the same track, but we'll add one more session just devoted to the Share.Habitat online fundraising tool. And we hope to kind of actually share a PowerPoint presentation for that particular call. So that brings us to tonight's call, which is focused on great events and that idea of event-based fundraising. And we really just have kind of two learning objectives for the evening. One is to kind of share with you kind of the wide spectrum of fundraising events and give you a sense of kind of what we've heard from leaders and volunteers that have worked well, and then also hopefully give you some inspiration in thinking about maybe hosting an event that you can use or inspire your volunteers that are on your teams to use for raising funds for their trip. So we're going to kind of focus on events in two categories. One category, sort of looking at the benefit event, which is you basically reaching out to your network and creating sort of a benefit event. And, in some cases that might be hosting a dinner party. It might be inviting your network to a cafe. And some benefit events also may be opened up to people that you don't know. And then another category of events that we would focus on is also those events that are kind of sales events. So, the craft sales, the car washes, the yard sales. Some of those events are a little bit easier to tackle as a closed team of people that are working together to raise funds. But we have had many individuals that have also been very successful in creating sales events. So I was going to start off by just kind of introducing Allie Harnett, who Allie's actually worn several different hats with Global Village. She's led several teams, and she's also been involved in hosting teams in Guatemala. She's a very committed partner who has also been involved in meeting up with our team when we come to Chicago and do team leader trainings. And she's done some great creative fundraising events, reaching out to her network. And I thought she would be a great speaker to just sort of share the variety of events that she's done and kind of how she's gone about that idea of creating kind of a fundraising goal for the event, who she reaches out to, how she promotes her events, and also just kind of where she gets her ideas. And maybe she can share some of her successes, and then we'll allow some time for you all to ask some questions of Allie, and then we can share some more ideas and what some of you maybe have done in event-based fundraising that has been successful. Because I think every call that we've done so far, we've definitely learned from each other and come away with some good ideas that others have shared. So I'm going to let Allie take over and kind of share a little bit about her current fundraising events and some of the things that she's done before. So Allie, are you ready?
Can you hear me now?
Yep, I can hear you. Yep.
Okay. I muted myself for the... So, hi, everyone. I enjoy doing event-based fundraising, I guess, because I really like hosting events and going to events and having events. So I think that's why I've done a lot of that over letter-writing campaigns or things of that nature. So I guess you just want me to talk about some events I've had and...
And just kind of how you've gone about promoting them and sort of what kind of maybe fundraising goals that you've set and maybe what some of your really successful events have been and maybe what some of your recommendations would be as far as things that maybe you learned, lessons learned in the events too. Okay.
So, I will – my most recent fundraising venture was for my trip to Haiti this summer, and it was a special team because we were the first Global Village team to return to Haiti, and we were a warm-up team kind of practicing for the Jimmy Carter Work Project. So it was a special, unique team, and so we had a special, unique fundraising goal. So we had to pay our trip fees, which were $1,200, kind of the standard – Global Village fee, but we all committed to raising, it was like $2,500 above that or something. My goal was to raise $3,700 total, is that right?
Correct.
Is that how much I raised? I know it was a really big number. So I thought I needed to be as creative as possible. And so what I've found to be the most inspiring for me is to do things that I really enjoy doing. So in the past, I've had kickball tournaments and barbecues and Backyard Olympics. Well, actually, Backyard Olympics was part of this one. And then this year, I've become involved with a improv comedy group. And my group actually really likes to perform and wants more performance opportunities. So I came up with a way of making it a fundraising venture. And so people paid to come to an improv comedy show. And that gave us an audience to do improv in front of. And it gave me an audience to talk about Habitat in front of. And it gave me a way to raise money. So I found a local coffee shop in my neighborhood. And the owner happens to be my neighbor. And so I've become friends with him as I've gotten to know him through these events. And I've done two improv comedy shows at his coffee shop and raised about $1,500 total, I think, through both of them. And so the first one was, and we called it Hilarity for Haiti, because we thought we were pretty hilarious, or that was the goal anyway. And I know you're all laughing, even though your phones are muted right now.
I'm laughing.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Beth. So we just invited, basically the network was everybody who is involved with my improv comedy team. So all of their friends and family, all of my friends and family. And then it was an open invitation to anybody who goes to the coffee shop. And there were posters at the coffee shop that a graphic designer that works for the coffee shop made. They were really well attended. I mean, the capacity for the coffee shop is about 50 people, and it was standing room only both times. So that worked well. There were slightly different things about each of the events. In the first event, I did a silent auction, and I just walked around my neighborhood and asked local businesses if they would be willing to make a donation of something for my silent auction, and I got cards for restaurants and stores. I went into it's called Jean's Sausage Shop. It's like a German grocery store and fine foods. And this guy was like, sure, I'll give you something. And he looked around and he picked up some glasses. They were like beer glasses from German beers. And I was like, great, thanks. And I was like, I'll take anything. That's cool. Had no idea, like, what I would really do with that. But I ended up putting it in the silent auction, and the minimum bid was like $12 because that was what they were worth. But they ended up bringing in $50, and it was like a bidding war between these two guys because they both wanted the beer glasses. So you never know what will become valuable in a silent auction. But the gift certificates for restaurants and things are popular items because people will, you know, be going to those places anyway, and they're willing to spend money on them because it's going to a good cause, and it's basically just free money for Habitat. So the first event was successful because of both the silent auction and just the entrance fee that people paid.
And Allie, how much did they pay?
They suggested donation was $10, but a lot of people paid like
$20. Mm-hmm.
And there was a $50 in my jar. I'm not sure if that was one person or multiple people, but somebody gave a $50 bill for some reason. So that was great because it was just really easy and it was a fun event, and everybody, you know, in my improv group wanted to perform anyway, so it was a nice way to have an excuse to do a show, basically. And everybody had fun. In the second event, it was after I came back from Haiti, and I really wanted to do another event because the experience was so phenomenal and I wanted to share what I'd learned and what I'd seen, and the project down there is just great. So I was really excited about like getting the word out and having a chance to talk about the project going on. But also I had brought back some artwork from Haiti. It was just some pieces that I brought on. And so I wanted to sell those as auction items. And the coffee shop has an art show every month. They have a different local artist featured. And I had told my friend, the coffee shop owner, about this. And he's like, how about in December, since it's kind of the month of giving, what about if you do an art show that month and have the auction throughout the month, and then the art will be on display for the month of December. And at the end of the month, you know, whoever's the highest bidder gets the art. I'm like, great idea. So we had the art opening, which they do every month when they have a new artist. They always have an event to open the art show. And this was an improv show as well. So it was art meets improv is how they advertised it in the coffee shop. And so we did another improv show. We had the art up. I had little explanations of what all the paintings were. And then I didn't have enough art to fill up all the walls in the coffee shop, so I made, like, a photo display of photos from my Habitat trips around the world, and I had, like, a Haiti section and then Dominican Republic and Nepal and Guatemala all on display with explanations of what Habitat does in each of those countries, what the need for housing is. It was really stuff that I cut and pasted from the Habitat.org website. But it was very, you know, I thought it was informative. It was kind of like the Habitat Museum for a month at this little coffee shop in Chicago. So, you know, I don't know how much of an impact that had on coffee shop patrons, but I liked that it was there for a month and people could see it and kind of see what the work is that Habitat does. And I had a poster about Global Village and what people can do, and I had a sign-up sheet for people to sign up if they wanted more information. So it was kind of like a multifaceted event because it was raising money but also raising awareness and displaying photos and art and things. So it was kind of a really cool thing. I was excited about how it turned out. It looked good.
And a local NPR traffic reporter actually wrote a blog post about it. She writes blog posts about good works in Chicago, and so she featured this habitat thing in her month of December. So kind of cool. So that's those events. Do you want me to talk about the other things?
Yeah, I'm interested in your like backyard Olympics and you've done.
So in the summer, I did a backyard Olympics. I just happened to be a part of a group of friends that really like to play games. So we play kickball. We play really any kind of game that can be created will end up happening in any given evening with my particular group of friends. So I kind of expanded on that idea and made a backyard Olympics. So I had the bags, beanbag tossing game, and deer pong was available, and flippy cups and drinking games that are popular in the younger set. But then I also did a bunch of Minute to Win It games. So do you guys know the TV show Minute to Win It?
Mm-hmm.
Where you do like a task that has to be completed in 60 seconds, and the tasks get increasingly challenging. And so I had a bunch of these games, and it was materials that you need, like ping pong balls. I had to get a lot of ping pong balls, and solo cups, and macaroni, and spaghetti, and washers, and chopsticks. I mean, random things that are all like materials for these Minute to Win It games. And I set them up on tables around. I ended up doing it actually at a bar because it was a weekend where it was extremely hot in Chicago and they were predicting thunderstorms all day. So I moved it to a bar in my neighborhood that had a bunch of tables. So it ended up being Ravenswood Pub's Backyard Olympics, but I still call it Backyard Olympics. And everybody got a sticker chart. I work in an elementary school, so we use sticker charts a lot. So I gave everybody a sticker chart, and then they would go around to the tables and play the games, and if they completed the task within 60 seconds, they got a sticker. And then whoever had the most stickers at the end of the night won a prize. It was a cheap little metal thing that I got at the dollar store or something. It wasn't very exciting, but it was just fun because people are competitive, and they like that kind of thing. And it was also fun to
entrance fee.
Yeah, actually there was. People paid, I think the suggested donation for that was also $10. So that ended up bringing in a couple hundred dollars. What was I going to say? Oh, just kind of playing off a popular TV show was helpful, or was an interesting thing to do because, you know, Minute to Win It is popular, especially during the summer. That's when it's on TV. And you see those things on TV and you want to try them out. And this was a chance for people to do that. So that was how I got that idea. What did I have something else to tell you about? Backyard Olympics kickball. Something I did a few years ago was a kickball tournament. Actually, my first kickball tournament was when I was running a marathon and raising money for a children's hospital. And it was called Kicking It for Kids. And kickball was kind of new to Chicago at the time, so it was very successful because it was just so novel and exciting. Now kickball is kind of played all over the place, so it's not sort of as unique. But at the time, I was able to recruit like 12 teams. They all paid a $200 entry fee, or maybe it was each person paid $20 entry fee, which was very cheap for the day, but I ended up raising $2,500 that I had to raise for the marathon all in one day. And I just structured it like a round robin tournament, and there was a bracket or something, and it's been years since I did that, but I remember it being a fairly easy event because it was basically just recruiting people to play and then setting it up so that they knew where and when to play, and then the people took over because they just had a blast playing kickball. I did, actually. I made trophies out of little kickballs. I mean, I basically just painted, like, with puffy paint on mini playground balls. It wasn't a very big deal, but the real prize was having fun and participating, I think.
Let me see if anyone has any kind of specific questions for you about, you know, what you've done and also maybe some of the challenges, too, that you faced in kind of planning some of the events. So anybody have any specific questions for Allie about what she's done with fundraising?
Allie, this is Stacy in Baltimore. I'm just curious, it sounds like you've been on more than one build. And so can you or anybody on the phone sort of speak to those of us who kind of do continuous fundraising? In other words, you know, we raise money for one trip and then, you know, we're going on another one. So, you know, how do you decide? I mean, I don't know if it's just intuitive, like whether or not you repeat something right away or do you, you know, how often do you ask the same people to participate versus new people? I mean, just that sort of thing.
Yeah, good question, because I do feel like I'm constantly going on these trips, and so I'm constantly asking the same people for more money for a new place, which is always a compelling cause, and it's always, you know, Habitat is always, it kind of sells itself, I think, because it is such a great organization. The money is spent well. It has a good purpose. Your trip has a good purpose. So it's people, I don't think, are offended by being asked multiple times. But still, it is, you're asking people multiple times for more money. I think I've addressed that by trying to come up with unique things and new and different things every time. The improv show was different than the kickball tournament, which was different than the Backyard Olympics. And it's my same group of friends, plus all of their friends and their network, but they like doing fun stuff, so they don't mind doing fun stuff. I prefer offering people something fun to do over just asking for money, myself, just because I like to do fun things too, and I think people always like getting some sort of a prize. Actually, that reminds me of something else I was going to tell you about. This campaign that I did for Haiti, I did send out, like, the general fundraising appeal letter where you say what you're doing and you ask for a donation. But I tried to do something unique by making it, like, an NPR-style pledge drive. And so I had different pledge levels, and I said, if you pledge $50, you can have the choice of a batch of brownies. I make very good brownies. A batch of cheese grits. I'm famous for my cheese grits. a parallel parking lesson. I was like trying to like think of something good at. I'm like, I am good at parallel parking. So if anybody wants to learn, I'll teach you. Nobody chose that as their prize, but people did choose cheese grits and brownies. I offered $100 was a special VIP seat at the improv show. And so for that, I had, like, a couch up in the front, right in front of the stage, and I made these special, like, medals, the leftover medals from the Backyard Olympics. They were just these cheap little medals, and I put a sticker on it that's from a mailing label. You know how you get mailing labels from Habitat and all these other nonprofits? There's a mailing label that has a little house on it, so I, like, made a sticker medal thing for the VIPs. And then for $250, I offered a ukulele serenade, which is sort of random, but I was like, I'll sing you a ukulele song if you give me $250. Sure.
And for $300, I won't?
Yeah, right, exactly. That was one joke that went around. It was like, how much did we pay you to not sing? Yeah. But actually, my parents were like, we want a ukulele song, so... It ended up being very cute. The Hilarity for Haiti 1 show, the first show, happened to be on Father's Day. So my parents were there, and I rewrote the lyrics to Somewhere Over the Rainbow to sing about my dad. And it was actually pretty touching. People liked it, and my dad loved it. Made him cry a little bit. So that was just something kind of random and weird that I came up with, but $250, it was great.
So would you say that it worked then, the letter you sent?
Yeah, I think it did. Some people were like, I'll give you $100 and I don't need the parallel parking lesson, but, you know, thanks anyway. Mm-hmm. But I'll give you $100 just for Haiti. But maybe it was an incentive for somebody who might not have donated otherwise. Like I had a friend who gave the $50 to be a VIP, a minor VIP, not a major VIP, for the improv show, where he might have been one who just paid the $10 to get in. So
right.
It was just a little extra incentive. Yeah.
I like how you put a twist on the fundraising letter. I think that the creativity and just being making the pledge levels, I think that's pretty fun.
Yeah, it actually wasn't my idea. One of my team members did it a few years ago when we were going to Colombia, and she thought of things that she really likes to do and is good at. So she's like, she's obsessed with pie. This girl like loves pie, and she'll make pie at any for any reason. You don't really have to twist her arm, but she said, I will make you a pie if you donate $50, and ended up getting a bunch of $50 donations and was, like, happy to make those pies. And, like, $100 gets you two pies. And then she also is a kayaker, so she offered kayaking lessons. Somebody paid for that. Somebody paid for some homemade jam. I mean, she just thought of things that she likes to do and then offered that as a prize. Babysitting was another thing that I offered. Because I like hanging out with my friends' kids anyway, so I'm like, they get time with Allie, and you get time off, and Haiti gets money, and we all win. So that was another successful thing. So variety, I guess. Variety is what I would say to that, asking multiple times for multiple donations. Does that answer that question?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was good. Any other specific questions for Allie?
I'm curious, this is Lisa, if Allie or anybody has tried participating in events that exist already rather than creating events. I put in a proposal. I haven't heard back yet for Ignite. I know not every city has Ignite, but it's a 5-minute talk. You get 20 slides, and as soon as you start talking, the slides auto-advance. It's a little nerve-wracking as an idea, but that's something that happens every month, so I put in a proposal to talk. So, like, things like that just happen. Has anybody tried anything like that with any success?
That's so funny that you talk about Ignite. Are you in Chicago?
No, I'm in D.C.
Okay, so I'm actually speaking at an Ignite on Monday night.
Good for you. Awesome.
Yeah. So it partially because my improv teacher is the one who's coordinating it now. So that's how I got in so quickly. I actually just committed to it last night. But I was going to talk about Habitat and why service vacations are far superior to boring, pleasure trips.
That's a great topic. Mine is going to be come build a house with me in Africa.
Oh, great. I don't know if this is true of all Ignites, but what he said is that it's not supposed to be a sales pitch. Like, you can't be selling something. You're pitching an idea or you're sharing an idea. I feel like by talking about these trips and why they're valuable and why the places need money, people will offer to give money anyway. Your regulations may be
different. Well, I'm not soliciting money. I'm asking people to come along, so that I'm thinking that I'll get donations.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Yeah. I think that's great. I mean, I've been to a few of those things. I've been to a Pachacacha, and I forget what the name of the other one was. Oh, a Moth Story Hour. And I feel like a bunch of people sitting in a room listening to a compelling story is exactly the audience that you want for potential donors. So, yeah, that's a great idea. I did think of one other thing. What was it? Oh, because you asked somebody if you ever latch on to other events that already happened. A few years ago when I was going to Colombia, I found out about a Colombian – well, there's an awesome Colombian restaurant in Chicago called Las Tablas. And the son of the owner of that was opening a new coffee shop called Macondo, and he was going to be selling Colombian empanadas and – arepas and stuff, and he happened to be opening the summer that I was going on this trip, so we coordinated a few events where he kind of was advertising his new coffee shop, and I was soliciting donations for Colombia, and he was in favor of that because it's his country, and I brought in people to his coffee shop, and he brought in donors to my trip. But one of the things that he was doing was coordinating an event at Millennium Park in Chicago where a Colombian band came and performed. So I invited a bunch of people to this park, and I made sangria, which I know isn't exclusively Colombian, but it was perfect for the park picnic. And, you know, people just came to this free concert but gave us money for Habitat Colombia and drank our sangria. So that was one thing that we latched onto. I like the thematic thing, and Global Village has such a great potential for these themes. You know, there's always ethnic restaurants that would probably enjoy getting new customers, so they may donate food. I had a Haitian restaurant donate some food for my Haitian event, and this Colombian restaurant donated for Colombia. Yeah.
I think, too, some folks have been successful with, like, tacking on if they're involved in kind of training for a marathon or triathlon or something, and they do that and raise money for the charity. That we've definitely had volunteers do that.
They're raising money for both things at once?
Yeah, or, like, a lot of times, you know, like, people are just joining marathons. They're not joining to be, like, part of, say, a team in training or raising money for leukemia. They're just doing it because they want to do it, but then they tie it into, hey, sponsor me for every mile, or, commit their training and their participation to their, you know, tie it into their Global Village trip and encourage people to support them in that.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. I had a team member once whose boyfriend was in a band, and she had a benefit concert and raised all of her money in one night because people loved her boyfriend's band, and the band donated all of the money to her Habitat trip that they brought in. It's another thing. I guess it's all about tapping into resources and networks that you have, but also just asking people that you don't know yet. My coffee shop guy happens to be my across-the-alley neighbor, and I only just met him last February during the snowstorm because we were both snowed in and working together to shovel out the alley so his car could get out, and then he helped me shovel out my car. And then later found out that he bought the coffee shop in May, and I was looking for a place to have this improv show, and it kind of snowballed from there. Yeah, it's finding charitable people. The other thing is he's committed to doing a charitable event once a month with his coffee shop. So if somebody's not doing that already, you should talk him into it.
Ellie, when you set out your plans for your events, did you kind of have in mind kind of an overall goal for each event that you were hoping to kind of hit?
That would be a smart thing to do, I think, in like a business model. No, I mean, my goal was always to raise $3,700 total. And I think I was kind of like, I'm just going to keep on having events and sending out my NPR pledge drive letter until I hit that. And actually, I was a little short at the end, and it was okay because it was an extra goal, but I ended up getting the rest with this last improv event and art auction. So I still was committed to getting that amount. I just didn't have it by game time.
I was close, though.
And when you did your events, like, you said that you had some information where people could sign up to get more information, but also did you have you said you had your laptop with you for one of the events?
Oh, yeah, that's right. At the coffee shop, they have Wi-Fi, so I made it very easy for people to make online donations. I just had my laptop set up to my We Are Habitat page, which is now called Share.Habitat, right? So I was blogging about my experience leading up to the trip, and it had a link to my fundraising page. And so that was set up at the coffee shop where people could just get on the laptop and make a donation right there. It was very easy. It's great in this digital technology world. It makes it much easier to get the money.
good. Any other questions from folks, or anything people want to share about the fundraising events that you've done, or sales, or any kind of words of advice that folks have with regard to events?
One event, actually, I just remembered that I didn't do, but somebody on one of my teams did, was a super easy. It was a yard sale, and what a, you know, people always like junk, and people always like getting rid of junk. So you can solicit other people's junk. Your friends will donate stuff to be included in your yard sale, and you host the yard sale, and then all of the money can be for your Habitat Fund.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, that's a piece that both individuals can do, or even groups can do. I know a lot of churches have, you know, big yard sales where they have a full, opportunity for the whole community to get involved, and then have a designated cause where the proceeds will go. So I think the yard sales can be quite effective as well.
Yeah. I mean, one thing I can say that I've definitely learned in the last year is that there are a lot of people who like to do performances, and they're always looking for an audience. So if you're not in an improv group, it wouldn't be hard for you to find an improv group or a band or even a guitar player who would like to do some sort of a performance, and you just pass the hat or ask for some amount of money, and people are entertained, and they will give... and they get a show. A lot of my friends are teachers and social worker types, so we're not the 1%. And I like to have an event for people to be able to go to, so they get something out of it rather than just asking them for money. I guess that's kind of my main focus, is giving people something that's entertaining, and it's not hard to find something that is entertaining.
Yeah, and I think a couple calls ago, I know our guest speaker Norm shared a little bit about the concerts that he also did. He went to Haiti, but he's also done fundraising for Ethiopia and some other trip locations, and had always kind of had really good success with the fundraising concerts. There's some kind of key tips that we would give overall for event-based fundraising. And I know Allie may need to kind of jump off the call since she's on her way to a performance. So I just really appreciate you joining us, Allie, and being available this evening. And I was just going to kind of review some points that I think, you know, we would definitely recommend in planning events. So I think Allie covered the one thing that I think is most important, which is do something that you enjoy and that you would enjoy going to. It's a lot easier to plan something that you think would be fun. And then really kind of look at trying to keep it simple. So kind of assessing what your network is and what resources you might be able to gain, whether that's who you know, whether it's an improv group or a band, or reaching out to a restaurant to host a fundraising event. So there's definitely that piece of kind of looking at your network and kind of deciding what sort of event would you be interested in doing. And then really also trying to keep it simple. Don't put a lot of money into it. But in some cases, you know, looking at kind of prizes, what Allie was saying, just looking at maybe baking things or things that are quite simple and not expensive to be able to use. And then really, if there's the opportunity when you're hosting an event to do a presentation, or, you know, say you did a yard sale or you had some other kind of sales event, to have kind of that information board and also a place where people can sign up. And ideally, if they can donate online, great. Otherwise, having kind of cards available to show how they could donate, or even a jar available where they could put in their donation. And then, you know, I think in having that opportunity to do a presentation is always great. It allows people to kind of hear more about the project and about what Habitat's doing, and be able to, you know, to ask questions and be more engaged. And then, as Allie said, you can really make it fun and tie it into the theme of the destination where you're going to. We've had some teams that have some leaders that have actually hosted dinner parties. That the whole theme is we're going to build a house tonight. And, you know, often those are leaders that are ambassadors that are trying to raise a set amount of money for a country to fund a house. But I think, you know, we would say be as creative as possible and, you know, reach out to your networks. And I think depending on, you know, how engaged you are and what your kind of work atmosphere is too, we've definitely had people that have been successful with events at work, lots of team, closed teams that have been very successful with events, you know, through their church or school. So those of you that are part of closed teams definitely have an advantage in working together as a group to think of creative events and reaching out to a broader network. I think there's still lots of really interesting ideas for individuals to do. And I don't know, Kate, if you're still on the line, I was wondering if maybe you could share a little bit about one of the team members that did a hosted a fundraising event. I think it was in a bar or a restaurant for, I believe it was for the Nicaragua trip. Are you still with us?
Yeah, yes, exactly. It was for a team to Nicaragua. There was a woman who lives up in New York, and so she created an event called, I think it was called Happy Hour, Happy Hour for Habitat. And so she kind of worked with a local restaurant in New York to serve like a full dinner and just have it kind of at cost. So they I think she charged maybe $50 for dinner, and she was able to get just the discounted rate from the restaurant. So she was able to kind of get quite a bit of a net revenue from the dinner. And she hosted this huge event, and she had a huge network of people that she worked with and all of her friends and her family that lived in the area. So it was just, you know, just a night out together to be able to just eat dinner and share that time together. And so she raised quite a bit of money. I don't recall exactly how much, but it was really a huge success and pretty easy. And, you know, everyone would like to go out to dinner anyways and then be able to share a little bit more throughout the evening about Habitat and the project that she was doing in Nicaragua. So, yeah, I thought that was a great event.
Anybody else that's on the call that has, you know, any experience with other events that have been effective or any kind of advice about maybe what not to do?
I just unmuted myself. This is Allie again. Because I just remembered another part of my Hilarity for Haiti thing that was really random but very successful. There was a caricature artist who frequents the coffee shop who offered to do caricatures during the event. And I, when I first heard that, I'm like, that is so random. I have no idea what people are going to feel about that. But it ended up being great. Like, people got these pictures drawn of them, and caricatures were funny, and they all related to things that people are interested in. My caricature is like a picture of me with a hammer and a hard hat on. I'm like Habitat Girl. And people paid $10, I think, for a caricature, and I raised like $150 that way. And the artist just gave 100% of it to Habitat. So that was a random thing that was really cool. And then I'm going to say something I learned the second time around was I tried to do too much, and I made it a little bit more complicated than it needed to be. Like I said, there was the art meets improv event, and so we had the art opening plus the improv show, and I was working really hard to get all of the art up on the wall. Well, the art was up on the wall, but I wanted to have all the explanations done, and I had them in this fancy frame stuff, and it ended up being more complicated than I thought to get everything assembled for the art show that was going to be up for the remainder of the month. I was really in a panic about it before the show, and I wanted to have a silent auction, and I thought it would be a great idea to sell all these extra trinkets that I've brought back from all my travels. And I'm like, people would want a random, you know, placeholder or coffee mug from Guatemala because it could be a great Christmas gift. And it just overly complicated things because people were really there that evening to see the improv show and have some beverages, whereas the art stuff was up for the entire month, so I could have panicked less about having it ready that exact night, and I could have spent less time getting the silent auction or the trinket sale, I should say. prepared because people weren't as interested in those trinkets as they were in just seeing an improv show and drinking. I remembered another detail about it, too. The coffee shop is BYOB because it doesn't have a liquor license. It's BYOB, so people were able to bring their own beer and wine. But the first time I actually got beer donated from a local brewery and I got wine donated from a friend. So if somebody wanted to be BYOB, they paid $10. But if they wanted to drink our booze, then they paid $20. So most people elected to drink our booze, our donated booze. So that was a way that I made more money.
Any other kind of closing comments or thoughts that folks want to share just about their experience? We do have some in the fundraising guide that's published online. There's actually a whole bunch of ideas around event-based fundraising, from hosting dinner parties to working with local restaurants and getting discounts and doing kind of the special meals like Kate had mentioned. There's also kind of ideas around like bowl-a-thons and hosting hosting other kinds of work-a-thons or even looking at, offering services like pet care, babysitting, that kind of thing that would fit into the workathon. And then there's also kind of the selling stuff information in there about yard sales and even, some of the groups, the closed groups, have had a lot of success. Some of our university teams just, selling T-shirts or other things because they have sort of that open market there on campus. So a lot of it is, kind of who your network is and what you have access to in looking at being able to plan events. But it can be, quite simple and very successful. And our key message would be keep it simple and also, try to find an opportunity to share directly about what you're raising the funds for, and if at all possible, be able to show a video or visual about the country that you're going to or the project that you're going to, if it's a U.S. project, to get people excited to be engaged. And then, really thank people and get them to be on sort of your follow-up list to be able to, share with them, kind of the successes of the project that you've been engaged in with Global Village. Any other comments? Okay, well, as I mentioned when we started the call, next week our last call in the series is going to be about how we can thank our donors and also keep them engaged. And Larry Galante is going to share a little bit about what he did with his fundraising campaign for his most recent India trip and what he's done to kind of reach out post-trip and thank donors and keep them updated on the work that he did in India. And Larry's also been led other teams too, so he'll probably share a little bit from those experiences as well. But we really, again, thank you for your participation, and we're going to be continuing to do the call series and hopefully also engage more team members in taking advantage of this discussion time. But also, at any point, feel free to contact the GV office, and we'll be happy to support you in your effort. So we really appreciate your commitment to the program and to the various Habitat organizations that you'll be working with around the world. And we wish you luck as you go out and work to inspire your team members in raising funds for Habitat's work globally. So thanks again for joining us this evening. And We'll look forward to hopefully hearing from some of you next week. So, and Allie, if you're still online, thanks again for sharing your experiences with us.
Yeah, thank you. This was fun. Thanks for listening. And good luck, everyone.